My name is Lee. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you, Linda Ray, for your share. Thanks for inviting me, Maureen. It's interesting, you know, I always say that when I did the third step, I gave God permission to get me where He wanted me, whether that meant I went kicking and screaming or whether I went quiet or I go quietly. And, you know, interesting today, I walked into the meeting 20 minutes late down at Grace Church. And then when I walked in and I sat down, I went, oh, I promised that I would speak at Unity Day, and I wonder when that is. And I'm listening to other people, and I sneak my phone out, and I look, and it says, and my phone, because I didn't put the time down, because I thought I remember the time, the phone said February 28th, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., mm-hmm. And I kind of went, oh, now I have to make amends to somebody, and I screwed up. And so I go to my sponsor after the meeting feeling horrible, and I said, I can't remember, this has been such a crazy month, I can't remember who I need to talk to. And Maureen came over and said, it's today at 12 to 3, you haven't missed it, you know, and didn't bring a lunch, didn't do, you know, but it's absolutely what I needed, and that's what I find happens to me. I am both a compulsive overeater and a recovering alcoholic. And my story has both parts to it, so I hope it's okay for me to... My steps were... I mean, a great deal of my step work was done in AA before I got to OA. And February 8th, I celebrated 28 years sober in AA. And when I took my chip, it was one of the most difficult... It's been through one of the most difficult times I've had. I'm going to cry a lot. In sobriety. But I kind of want to, as Linda Ray was talking about, you know, the meat of her, no pun intended, of your topic you felt was around step 11. And to me, in unity and in the direction I have, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now is around the third step. And so I kind of want to preface... the third step promises, which we hear a lot about the ninth step promises, but I really fell in love with the third step promises. So this kind of tells me about my problem. It's from 62 of the big book, my problem, and into the solution, into the promises. It says, so our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And the compulsive overeater is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we compulsive overeaters must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. And I found that my selfishness around my compulsive overeating is like 180 degrees different than my selfishness around alcoholism. It's a very interesting, but it's still selfishness. It's just a much more, it's hidden under a lot more stuff, I find, in my compulsive overeating. We must be rid of the selfishness or it kills us. Yes, God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without His aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had God's help. Here's the solution. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He was the principal. We are His agents. He is the Father. We are His children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom. Here are the promises. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. And it says, now we're at step 3. Funny, I thought we were at step 3 back here when you said we were at step 3. And that's when we say the third step prayer. When I was a little girl, my mother had to lock the cabinets where the cookies were kept. Because I would find a way to use, I would use the drawers as stairs and get up and steal the Oreos. And my mom was very, kind of a fashion model and in Oklahoma City. She was in the junior league and, you know, she was, appearance was very important to her. And she's my second heart. I loved her more than anybody. But she was also very disappointed when I was a fat kid. And, and my mom's and my dad's relationship wasn't very good, and they would yell at each other, and I would, you know, I would eat. And I was, you know, tubby. But I look at the pictures now, and I wasn't nearly as tubby as I thought I was, you know. And so food was my first drug of choice, absolutely. And I learned about alcohol later, but I mean, you know, I would, you know, all the things about stealing and, you know, keeping pots of food underneath the bed and pulling them out. I mean, it's just, you know, everything that we read about that in the meeting this morning. So that was definitely, and then you know, I found that alcohol did even more wonderful things for me in college, and so I had a fairly steep trajectory down my alcoholic slide. But you know, I went to Europe when I was 16. I ran out of money. I was with a school group, and three of us had a charter that came back 2 weeks later. So I was on my own for 2 weeks in Europe, and I realized about 2 days into it that I could eat what I wanted to and sleep on the street, and even have to eat less than I wanted to, or I could stop eating and have enough to visit, go to hostels and stuff. And so I stopped eating for 2 weeks, lost 30 pounds from when I went. I mean, anyway, we were on a sailboat with like 10 kids from high school, and people just looked at me like I was, they said, you know, I mean, I was disgusting to them because I was 160 pounds or whatever, and they didn't want to see me sweating on it. I mean, you know, they were really ugly to me. And so I came back, and I had lost all the weight, but I'd also been fasting for 2 weeks, and just horrible on my body and everything else. So just, I come by both diseases very honestly, and I was bulimic in college, like a lot of people were, anyway, I got sober in 87, and still struggled with food off and on, and what I've found out, I know I'm going to go back and forth, but I came to, I was up to 100 to 240 pounds when I had a marriage that was going down the toilet and I wouldn't look at it. And I was 13 years sober and in a marriage that I wouldn't look at and 240 pounds. And I had people in AA tell me, you know, it's such a shame that we, you know, we save our lives around alcohol and we kill ourselves with a fork, you know. And those 12 steps as applied in AA do nothing for me in OA. You know, it was like trying to use blood pressure medication for diabetes. It wasn't the same disease. And so I tried OA in Nashville and just didn't get it, you know. Where I got sober, and I was here in Colorado, and you know, I'd given a kidney to my mother. I'd had to lose 20 pounds to give a kidney to my mother in 1997, and I did because I had to, and so I gained the weight back, and my mom just didn't want to see me unhappy, didn't want to see me dead, and so I went to an OA meeting and felt like I belonged, and I got a sponsor, and lost 100 pounds. This was 2000, and realized very short time, maybe a month into my into being in OA with a sponsor, doing the work, but doing it in a different kind of way. And I was living here. My husband was living in Nashville, and I couldn't eat that away anymore. I couldn't, because I wasn't drinking it away. I couldn't eat it away. And we realized that we were going to have to get a divorce pretty much. I mean, when the food got taken away and I couldn't run from the pain from that and I didn't really have anything else, I had to learn how to face reality. And we had the best divorce. I mean, it's tough to have. I mean, it was horribly painful and tearing my heart out of my chest, but we had a parties agree divorce, you know, and the weight, once I started looking at the stuff that I needed to look at. And so that was in 2000. And my mom passed away in 2003, and the people around me in OA here were, they just collected me to themselves and loved on me through that whole very difficult thing. I was abstinent, and, you know, I had been 4 years or so and fell in love with my husband, who's my new husband, who's an amazing guy, and figured, you know, what problem? What overeating? You know, I mean, I'm sober, and I've got a good body, and, you know, everything's awesome, and I've gone through the hard stuff, and so I stopped coming to meetings. And when my mom had my kidney, they warned her that the surest way to lose your kidney was to stop taking your medicine, and that the people that lost their kidneys when they had transplanted, like I have a transplanted life, you know, and the people that have rejection are the people that feel so good they stop taking their medicine, and it happens all the time, and that's what happened to me in that part of my OA. I stopped coming to meetings, and started using food again, back and forth, and I came back to OA a little over 2 years ago, because I was to the point, I was back up to 170 or 180. I hated myself, and I could not eat. I would start in the morning saying, "This is great. I'm going to give it to God. It's going to be fine." I mean, you know, I pray to God every day. God and I have an awesome relationship. I mean, God and I, we chat. You know, through my AA experience, one reason that I haven't had a drink in that much time is that I've had a personal relationship with God, and I've done a lot of chatting with God like He's a friend. And, you know, I remember I went to an AA meeting early in sobriety, and somebody said, "Yeah, I have a higher power who I call Skippy." And Skippy and I talk about girls. And I thought, that's the kind of higher power I want. And that's the kind of higher power, you know, I have, even though it's much different than that. It's grown into something else. But I came back in to the rooms, and I sat down in the chair, and it was like the first time I sat down on the chair of AA when I knew I was in the right place. I had that, I was thinking, I can't afford to spend $10,000 to go to the Golden, I have to have somebody that locks me in a room and feeds me lettuce, you know, because I cannot do this. I cannot not eat. I am powerless. I cannot not eat. And this little voice said, well, you could either, you know, go to Sierra Tucson and have them lock you in someplace, or you could actually, maybe, how about going back to an OA meeting? How would that work? And I did, and that barbed wire in my stomach that I felt when I first got sober, when I went to my first AA meeting, where when I said I was an alcoholic, half of the barb didn't all go away, but a half of the barbed wire went away. And when I came back to my meeting, to my OA meeting, you know, 2.5 years ago, most of that barbed wire went away, and I got a brand new sponsor, and I was willing to do anything. To me, the secret to recovery is that I have to be willing to do what I'm sure isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. My agreement with it, or my foreknowledge that it makes sense, is my biggest obstacle in my experience. I have to be so desperate that I say, "You want me to stand in the middle of the road on my head and eat dog food? Awesome. I'm up. I mean, whatever you want me to do, I will do." And when I came back 2.5 years ago, that's where I was. And my sponsor told me, in her experience, it wasn't as so much about the food as it was about the behaviors. And she helped me understand. She gave me a plan. And like that, I mean, I'm thinking, this is impossible. I'm going to New Orleans for a weekend, and if I can't not eat, I certainly can't not eat in New Orleans. And we'd kind of gone over, and I was able to do what I needed to do. I mean, it was amazing. I had instant abstinence, and my physical recovery was great, and my body got good, and I started thinking I was a Barbie doll and loved going shopping. And there were other parts of my life that I've just found out now in this last month that I was absolutely ignoring and not paying attention to. And so that worked great, and then over you know, I was a year and a half in, and I started trying to sponsor people, and I said, well, this abstinence thing is easy, you just do this, and nobody was able to do it. They didn't want me to sponsor them, and then I started getting really judgmental, and knew in my heart that I was above my raisin. I knew in my heart that I was getting ready to take a huge fall because my ego was out of control, and that there were things going on that I didn't know were going on, and that I was getting ready to take, you know. And that started in October. Food got away from me again. And I'm not in boxes and bags right now, but my abstinence has been, you know, I mean, all of my little rules for myself that I've been loving with myself about is that, well, you know, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to do that again. They are falling like pins. And in this last month, you know, with my, I took over my mom's business when she died in 2003, and I was surrounded by a lot of good people, and I was lucky, and we did really well, and over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years, it's been a lot more difficult. I've also been, trying to be, one of the reasons that I was playing Barbie doll with myself was that I'm a international president of a 10,000 member organization, and I had to go, you know, I had to dress up in evening gowns for five years, and you know, all of a sudden I actually look good in the evening gown, and so I mean, all these people are treating me like I'm queen of the world, you know, and I'm going into my office and I'm not looking at my financials and I'm not doing what I need to do, and all of a sudden hell breaks loose and everything, you know, and I'm eating because I know. I read a book somewhere, Janine Roth or something, it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you, and it's the same thing you were talking about. I love whatever you said earlier. And so knowing I was going to get my comeuppance, and it's, you know, God leads me. I believe that when I took the third step, I gave God permission to take me where He wants me to go, whether I go quietly or whether I go kicking and screaming. You know, and because that's what I believe when I take the third step. And I take the third step in my car every morning, and it's much more difficult to do the third step and the seventh step prayer. I did the third step prayer and the seventh step prayer in my car on the way to work when I had a tumor, a breast tumor, and I didn't know if it meant that I was going to die or whether I was not going to die. And I said the third step, I said the same words when I was waiting for that diagnosis to come back in 2010. And I'm saying the same third step prayer, and, you know, I mean, I got to keep my breast, and I'm 4 years I'm 4 years healthy, you know, and part of that is, I feel, is because I'm not eating the way I was eating, and I'm doing things healthy, and I was exercising, and all this great stuff. And so now I'm, you know, in February, and I find out that my controller has not been putting the money into people's 401ks, and so we're $43,000 that we have not paid of the employee's money into the 401ks, and that I, you know, somebody could call the DA and I could go to jail. And I didn't know about it because I'm blissfully, I'm talking to my sponsor. I said, I've just got this incredible sadness and this is emotion and I don't know what it is. Well, it's what I have been refusing to look at. And sometimes it takes that pain for me. And I know I'm all over the place, but this is my experience. And so for the past month, you know, I've been waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking, you know, can I save the company that I took over from my mother? You know, I've got a wonderful husband. You know, we're not going to end up in a refrigerator box underneath the viaduct anytime soon. You know, but it's also, I don't know about any of you guys, but somehow I got the message that if I wasn't perfect, then I wasn't worth keeping around. And that's my experience, you know, in my AA experience, my recovery, my resentments are huge. And so my four step and all that work in AA was around, you know, I'm really pissed at you, I'm really resentful, and going through that, getting underneath that, I can see where I'm at fault, you know, and I've got a lot of healing around that. In OA, I talked about the fact that it's a lot more buried deeper. And in OA, I'm a piece of shit. I'm the piece of shit that the world revolves around. And I can't even afford to be resentful at anybody else. That if I've got issues with somebody else, it's really my fault. And so it just seems to be so much more, I got to dig so much deeper in that and having both those things go on. So where I'm experiencing right now is that I have woken up in the middle of a minefield where I was, I really thought I had everything together. I had my body together. I had my food together. I had my AA together, and I've woken up realizing that I have really made some big critical mistakes that I was unaware of. And that imperfection, it's right in my face, and I either have to embrace it and deal with it and do the hard stuff that I have to do to get through it and try and love myself anyway. And love myself through the uncertainty and deal with the uncertainty and trust God to get me through all that stuff. And I've kind of been allowing myself to overeat over the last month just because I didn't know what else. I mean, that's been the one painkiller that I've had. And I just, it was so funny as I woke up this morning and said, okay, what am I going to do? I mean, what do I do that works? I write my food down. So I woke up this morning, I wrote my food down. What works? Go to a meeting. I went to a meeting. And here I am at Unity Day, and I'm almost out of time. So, messy. It's not all or nothing. My brain thinks it can kill me and go on. My brain does not get any shades of gray. My brain says it's either all perfect or it's all shit. I walk to my closet, I'm in size 4 jeans, but all the size 2 stuff doesn't fit, so I think I'm a piece of crap. The number, I haven't gotten on the number on the scale, there is a solution. God is taking me to where He wants me to be. God is helping me become a more spiritual being. When I give myself a break, I'll be able to help other people help themselves, give themselves a break. This is all about growing so that I can help others. It's all about being of service. It's all about the unity and not being so alone and not feeling myself on the top of the heap or underneath the heap. It's about being one among, a worker among workers, a friend among friends, a member of OA among members of OA. And it's painful. God, ego beating up is hugely painful. I'm working on one day well lived today, and I'm at 20 minutes till 2, and so far so good. So, thank you for the opportunity to share. One of my favorite things in the big book reminded me, it's the end of the Keys to the Kingdom, which is a story, and it's something that I heard when I was like 13 months sober, maybe in AA, and I was like finishing my birthdays with this. So I'll close with this. The last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have my share of problems, headaches, heartaches, and disappointments because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and a peace that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends, and with my OA friends, an unusual quality of friendship, for to these people I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligation, we again acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache so deep in the heart of every overeater that nothing before could ever reach it. The ache is gone and never need return again. Now there's a sense of belonging and being wanted and needed and loved. In return for your favorite bad food and a hangover, we have been given the keys to the kingdom. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you. Now we're open for share. So if you didn't get a chance to share before, you will share until about 2.
I have a short one.
Go for it.
My name is Mary. And I thank you so much for your share. The one thing that it reminds me of is that when the extra food goes away, all the feelings that come out are not something that I'm used to dealing with. And even in long-term abstinence, I just had my third birthday abstinent, and I feel really grateful for that. But even though that is true, and even though my food at the moment is going really well, and I'm very grateful for that, There are times when the feelings are so overwhelming, and I don't know what to do with those feelings. And I think we don't tell newcomers about that often enough. I think we don't warn people that when you put the food away, watch out. Because what's inside, all that turmoil, all that worry, that fear, the anger, the resentments, it's going to come out. And we do have a program to deal with it. That's what the steps do. They help us to deal with that. But I think it's really important that we use the tools that we have. And one of the tools that I use the most in this program is journaling. And when I talked about getting up in the morning and having that quiet time, or maybe I didn't talk about it, the first thing I do when I get up, I get a cup of hot tea, I sit over by the window, look outside, it's dark, but I know what's out there, and I take out my journal and my pen and I write. And I write and I write and I write until I'm finished. And I have to get out all that stuff that's in there that for some reason is not gone yet. And once I do, once I get it down on that piece of paper, then I'm available. My mind is available. My heart's available for me to have that quiet time with my higher power. But I'm telling you, if we don't have some way to deal with that junk, we will be back in the food. It's part of recovery. We have to learn other ways to deal with it. So calling our sponsor is a good way. Getting a sponsor if you don't have one is an excellent way to deal with that stuff. Writing about it, going to more meetings, and talking about it to a certain extent, although there was a sentence that was read this morning that says that we shouldn't share our most intimate personal stuff in meetings, that it would be best if we call our sponsor and share that stuff with her. Because you don't really want to know that intimate junk going on in my life anyway. But my sponsor does. She's going to help me recover and get beyond that. So I think using the tools at hand are really important. And I think admitting to ourselves that it's really not what we're eating, it really is what's eating at us, that has always been underneath the food for me. What is eating at me? And sometimes the top of my page will just read simply, what's bugging me right now? And that's where I start writing. What's bugging me right now? A good way to get in touch with it. Thank you.
I'm going to do a really quick share. I'm Tony. I'm a compulsive overeater. And, you know, the interesting thing about this program that I've discovered, and I'll only go a couple minutes here, but is that I got angry when I found out how hard it really is. And there's some really long-term compulsive overeater, you know, models in a men's meeting we go to every Saturday morning. And when they started describing how our food, their food plans got more specific, you know, year after year, year after year, and I discovered the same thing. I started saying, I got to take that off my list. Dang it. And then I have to take that off the list. And now I find a certain amount of freedom. Even things like, you know, being upset. In fact, it came up this morning because I've been very upset about the fact that our office always celebrates something with pizza. And I just hate that. And it came up, one of our members said that, you know, his event, you know, there's going to be a big pizza event for an organization that he's a part of within this particular company. And I've realized that, you know, I can come up with ways to still deal with that. His way is that he's not going to go to the pizza fest, but he'll be there for, you know, the kind of get-together afterwards. And so, you know, there are ways to deal with this. You know, you keep your food plan the way you want it and to have peace and to not be angry about it, but to rejoice in the freedom you have with the things you're given. And so that's where I've found some peace in maybe the last year.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm Brittany, a compulsive overeater and sugar addict.
Hi, Brittany.
You're welcome. Thanks. I am really new to program, but very, been a long time coming for my addiction and my disease. and I'm gonna cry a lot today, probably. I think I've been in tears the entire time that people have been talking. Thank you. I just got a sponsor. Amen. And I've been trying to reach out to a lot of people in my meetings. I've gotten a lot of phone numbers, and I've tried to do the whole social support thing. And I'm really finding that that is being accountable to other people for my personal health is, it's something I gotta do right now because I'm so not used to relying on my higher power yet, and we're just not there. And it's so good for me to hear all of the tools and the resources that everyone else uses in recovery. And I think I'm disappointed with myself today because I'm trying to let that go. Because the last couple of days I went to a conference and I was really scared. I was like, shit, I'm going to lose my effing mind. It was in Nashville. Like, I'm from the South. I love food. We love food. We don't know normal portion sizes. We don't know things that are not fried. And so, like, that is like, you know, from birth. Like, I feel like my food addiction was kind of, like, in the writing on the wall. And I was like, I'm going to lose my effing mind in Nashville. And surprisingly, I felt so much more sane there. And I think it was because I was away from all of the shit. I don't know, should I be censoring myself? I don't know. That is my life right now, right? Like, I wasn't at my job. I didn't check my email. I didn't respond to work texts. I let it all stay here. And I felt, like, free from that. And as soon as, like, my feet hit the ground, I, like, wanted my trigger foods. I wanted my binge foods, and I wanted to eat. And I was like, holy F, like, I felt so accountable to someone, and I was like, I was sharing my food with my sponsor, and I was calling her every day, and I was following the things that my therapist had recommended, and I felt really hopeful. I was giving things up to God at that time at the conference, and I was like, what am I doing? Why is it all of a sudden that I'm trying to control everything, and I feel so out of control, and in the end, doesn't everything work out anyway? Like, I stressed out this morning about getting to work before Unity Day and getting shit done, and it all works out because it got done in the end, and the things that didn't, doesn't matter, right? It'll get done sometime. But I'm so in, like, the mode of control right now, and I'm just really unhappy in my physical being right now. I hate mirrors. I avoid them at all costs. If it looks like I get dressed in the dark, I know there's a reason, right? I can barely wear anything in my closet because I refuse to buy anything that actually will fit me now. I haven't been this way in a long time. And I'm scared. I've recently also been looking into treatment. And shit, is it expensive? So I also cannot afford that right now. So I've dedicated... As my sponsor says, I'm trying to live in the land of commitment and committing to going to or listening to a meeting every day, getting some form of, like, physical activity in, even if it's just walking.
getting my food, and I'm trying to be accountable for to some other person because I don't feel very accountable to myself, and I don't feel very hopeful right now, in my recovery. And my therapist, I get so mad at her because she's like, I don't think this is your time. Maybe this isn't your time for recovery. Like, you don't seem to be on board with getting better. And I'm like, fuck you, lady. Like, and but it's true in some sense, right? Because if I had been completely on board, I'd be giving these things up to God. Like, I'd be going to meetings every day. I would be getting on the phone, and I hate the phone. I'd be doing the things that are logistically easy, but really emotionally hard for me. And so I am really thankful to be here, because every time I feel a little more normal. So thank you for letting me share.
Thanks.
Thanks.